Friends, please grab a seat. As I said, my name is Andrew. It's been my great pleasure to serve on staff here at Barney's for 4 years now. And a lot has happened in those 4 years. One of these things, in fact, happened in the last 4 years. On the 22nd of July at 3:28 p.m., I received this text message. Now, you may not be able to see that, but the message says, "Does this look like a cross to you?" And my response was, in quick succession, maybe, "What? And what does cross mean again?" Now, for those of you who can't quite see what that is indeed a pregnancy test. And a couple of things that I should clarify at this point. This was from my wife, Stephanie, who is here tonight. And indeed, plus means your life is going to change, apparently. Plus means there's a baby in there. Steph is about 6 months pregnant. She's here tonight rocking the pregnant lady kind of tummy and everything, looking really great. Now, I have to say, this was so much joy and surprise in this text message. I was in the office downstairs. I kind of had to go out for a second and just kind of process and send my reply. A huge amount of joy, but also, I confess, in the last, kind of since in the time since then, some other feelings as well. A little bit, can I be honest, of fear. Now, fear for all the normal reasons. Fear, like, what will this kid be like? Will I even like him? Will he like jazz? Will he be a good person, which is the same thing? Who knows who this person is? Who's this stranger who is going to arrive in my house? But some other fears have also come up since then. Maybe fears that you can relate to, whether you've been expecting a child or not. I was walking down Glee Point Road, and I just was struck with this question. What kind of world are we bringing this kid into? What kind of world will he inherit? Right? Demographers tell us that a child born about now may live up to 100, and that may be the norm. And we look back at the last 100 years, it's hardly been a joyride, has it? There's been world wars, there's been oppression, there's been violence, there's been rising CO2 levels. So what does the next 100 years hold for this child, this precious child, who I won't be around the whole time to look after? As he outlives us, what world will he inherit? Now, you don't have to be expecting a child to have felt this and to have wondered. Fear. There's so many reasons for us to fear. So many reasons for us to fear the future. Well, what do you do with fear? Do you turn off the TV and get off Twitter and focus on something happier? Do you try to just compartmentalize your mind and put those fears to one side? Do you kind of work on your interior? If I can't change the outside world, if I can't do anything about the fear, at least I can carry on and do the right thing regardless. Look, these are all noble ways of dealing with fear, but the reality, I think, is that nothing gets rid of fears. Nothing drives out fear except a reality which is more true and more bright and more glorious. Ever had a nightmare? A nightmare, maybe your family is being chased by a 50-meter-high gorilla. Or maybe Donald Trump has been elected president of the United States and started a trade war with China. I don't know. Have you ever woken from a nightmare and realized, oh, thank goodness. The second one is true, sorry. Have you ever woken from a dream and realized as the day, which is so much more real and so much more bright, just kind of casts away your fear? Can I say, friends, the only thing that drives out fear is a truer and a greater and a brighter reality. And what I want to suggest from our passages that we've heard read so wonderfully tonight, I want to suggest that there is such a reality. There is a reality bigger than your fears, friends. And that reality, that bright and that true reality, is that God himself came to be our king. And we're going to have a look at the passage, particularly the first passage that we had read, which begins with a teenage mother in northern Israel. As I was reflecting on this passage, and somewhat predictably, I had three questions which came up to my mind. Three questions. What kind of greeting? How will this happen? And why? Let's get into the passage. The verses will appear above my head. Question one, what kind of greeting is this? Luke 1, chapter 1, verse 26. God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. Now, Nazareth is a real town. You can visit Nazareth today, if you like, in the north of Israel. It's a great tourist destination. But there's not much mention of Nazareth in the ancient world. It was the type of place that you wouldn't really be able to put on a map unless you were from there. Who knows, or who can put reliably Narendra on the map? Anyone? Yeah. Are you from Narendra, sir? See? So Nazareth is like Narendra. Beautiful place, I'm sure. But it's not a famous place, at that time at least. And the angel comes and speaks to her. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings," verse 28, "you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you." And Mary is understandably minding her own business indoors somewhere in Nazareth, waiting for nothing, not expecting an angel. Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. Imagine what it would be like for Mary, a teenager probably, maybe 13, on her own, and this angel comes. Now, to help us kind of understand just how shocking this may have been for her, just cast out of your mind any of the images that we all have of angels with their kind of perfectly soft feathers and their harps and their kind of benign, expressionless faces. That is not an angel. An angel throughout history is terrifying. When an angel walks into the room, the first thing an angel has to say, history tells us, is, "Do not worry, I'm not here to harm you." Can I assure you, friends, I have never needed to announce myself in that way. All right? They don't go, "Wow, he's intimidating. I wonder if he's here to hurt us." All right? That's not how I announce myself. But angels, whenever they appear, have to say, "Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid." They're terrifying, more powerful than human soldier with ability to appear spontaneously, messengers from God. And the other reason why she may well have been terrified is vulnerable people, like teenagers in Nazareth in the first century, vulnerable people have learned the hard way that attention from strangers, from powerful strangers, is rarely good news. So what does this guy want, angel or no angel? And her look at this point must have asked the unasked question, because he responds straight away. "Do not be afraid, Mary." He says that a lot. "You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus." Now, I don't know what Mary was thinking, we're not told. This may not have been as settling as he intended. Rarely, just think of it, she's living in a war zone, an occupied territory. She is a teenager, unmarried. And this guy's coming, this angel's come and tell her that you're pregnant. Now, pregnancy rarely in a war zone improves things for a vulnerable person. You can imagine the foot's going through her mind at that point, the fear. Also, Mary knows something which ancient people knew and we know, which is where babies come from. She knows where babies come from, and she is, we're told, a virgin. And what's more, her neighbors know where babies come from. To be a teenage, unmarried girl who's meant to be a virgin, in a time when virginity was prized and exclusion, perhaps even violence, would be the result for anyone who transgressed, this was startling news. And so reasonably, I think, she asks the next question out loud. Question 2, "How will this happen?" Mary asks the angel, "since I am a virgin." Now, in those days, just to give some context, lower life expectancies meant that most people would get engaged, because girls would get engaged around about 13, and then at 14, they would move in with their husbands, and that's when their sexual relationship would begin. So Mary understands the angel to mean she's going to get pregnant now, not in a year's time, when she moves in with her husband and begins to have sex. And because she knows where babies come from, she has a question about the logistics, how this is going to happen. The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you." In other words, there will be no man's help this time. Now, this, can I say, is unusual. This is unusual. And it was even more probably unusual back then, right? Unusual for us, even though we have technology which can conceive children in all sorts of ways, but they weren't expecting a virgin birth. Here's the thing people don't realize. The Hebrew, the Jewish expectation was not that the Messiah necessarily would be born of a virgin. That famous passage from Isaiah, which says the virgin will conceive, could go either way, actually. The Hebrew word can mean virgin. It can also just mean young girl, young woman. They weren't expecting a virgin birth. And also, I see a lot of memes at the moment on Facebook and kind of Christmas specials on SBS about how many other pagan religions had a virgin birth as well. Actually, it's not nearly as common in the ancient world as you might think. There's loads of examples of people getting pregnant when some godlike demigod figure comes around and basically, under a context of questionable consent, impregnates a virgin. That's one thing that happens in the ancient mythologies. But for a virgin to spontaneously conceive, that is kind of new. And she is reasonably startled by it. No man's help will be required. She will be empowered to conceive without a man. Now, you may be saying this is highly unusual. You may be saying this is frankly impossible. And that's certainly what her neighbors would have thought. What she feared the neighbors would say. They know that the most likely explanation for this is she's lying. But I want to say to you, if you believe in God, or if even you maybe believe in God, the question is not really, could God have done this? Could God empower a teenage virgin to give birth? Well, of course he could. This is the God, after all. The very concept of God is he spins black holes out of nothing. What's a few more cells? No, the question really is not whether God could do this, but why would he? Why would God empower this woman to give birth? And that brings us to our third question. Why will this happen? We can rule some things out completely at the outset. It's not because sex is kind of strangely dirty and so the Messiah couldn't possibly come through normal reproduction. Not at all. We know Mary went on to have other children the normal way. How do I know that? It's in the Bible. Their names are mentioned. So we know that it's not that sex is somehow beneath her or she'd taken a vow of perpetual celibacy or anything silly like that. No. It's all about who this child is going to be. Did you notice that? In our hymns so far, our carols so far, there's a word which keeps coming up. I'll see if you can complete these lines if you've been paying attention. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn. Oh, come on. We're Anglicans, but we can still speak out loud. I keep saying this. Glory to the newborn. Thank you. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her. The answer is King. Oh, come, let us adore him, Christ the... No, Lord, that's wrong, that's a trick. But it keeps on going, Noel, 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 born is the King of Israel. Come and behold him, born the King, again, of Israel. Now, why do the carols writers continue to use this word? Two reasons. Firstly, it's a lazy rhyme, frankly. Secondly, because that's the very subject matter of what the angel tells her. That's the whole point of the Christmas, is that there is a king arriving, this king who will be born to the virgin. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever, and his kingdom will never end. Now, the problem with kings, isn't it, that they either fail or they're good for a while and they die. They're either oppressive towards their people and then they die, or they're good for a while and they die. We just do not have the resources on earth to get ourselves out of the messes that we get ourselves into. And that's the problem with kings. And so the question is, what if the solution to the world's problems could not come from within the world? What if the king who we desire, the king who will rule for the good of the nations, who will bring peace to the world and bring justice finally, what if that king doesn't exist on earth? What if that king has to come from outside? That is exactly what Christmas claims. Born is the King of Israel, but born not the normal way. What if we were so hopeless down here on earth that God had to come himself in the flesh? What if God comes to be our King? This is the reality. This is the reality which is bigger than our fears. I had a wonderful drive with an excellent taxi driver. Recently, who had all sorts of really great questions about Christmas. You see, for him, the whole idea of Christmas is, well, he was very polite about it, but is frankly, I think for him, scandalous. He didn't quite say it, he was being very polite, but for him, the whole idea that God would come as a little baby to earth was kind of blasphemous, scandalous. He was a recent migrant from a Middle Eastern country. He had a very high view of God. He had a view of God as a God of perfect power. And what Christmas says to him is, yes, God is a God of perfect power, but he's also a God of perfect love. And I actually said to him, I think you get something. So my new friend was a long drive. I think you get something that a lot of us Westerners don't get. Yeah, God became a baby. It's Christmas, happens every year. No. My Middle Eastern friend saw something here, which I hope we can just see for a minute here, friends. God, the one who made the universe effortlessly, who sustains it by his power, became a human. So I was delighted to share with him this good news about Christmas, which is not just that God is perfectly powerful, but that he is perfectly love as well. Yes, we were that desperate. Yes, he loves us that much. Yes, he does care what happens on earth. And there was no other way than for him to come in person to lead us to be our king. And I was so excited to be able to share this news for him because, you see, only this perfect love can drive out our fears. You see, if anything, the God of perfect power who he knew makes our fears worse. Because what would a God of perfection, a God of perfect power, a God who sees everything and rules with absolute justice, what would that perfect, powerful God think of me? I'm not perfect. Ask my wife. I'm not perfect. What would a perfect God think of me in all my proud moments and my stubbornness and my envy and whatever? But you see, if God is also a God of perfect love, if he really does love us, love you that much, that he would become a baby to become our king and lead us himself, that is truly a reality bright and real and true and good enough to take away our fears. That would truly be, in the words just read out, a God too great for the sky. Too great for the sky. I don't know what your fears are. Maybe it's climate change. Maybe it's failing health. Maybe it's failing at work. Maybe it's failing at uni. Maybe it is Donald Trump. Maybe it is troubled relationships. Maybe it's something more personal that you don't want to share with me. That's fine. But whatever it is, I want to say that the only thing which would drive out that fear is to get to know this King, Jesus. This King, this reality, this news who is greater than our fears. This King, this God who comes to be our King. Now, maybe you're a bit skeptical about this. Can I say, if you're a skeptic here tonight, tonight is the perfect place for you, tonight and here is the perfect place for you to be. I had a wonderful conversation with a lady called Yael. She's a very Orthodox Jew, and we had a fascinating conversation about this because she too is waiting for a king. She's waiting for God's king who will fix up the mess, but she made the really reasonable point, I thought. If the king has come, then why is the earth not at peace? And here's the thing, there's a sequel to Christmas, it's called Easter. And I was able to tell her about that. Now, if you don't know, if that's your question, if you're interested in that, I don't mind spoilers. You don't have to wait till Easter to find out the ending of this story. All right? If you want to come and chat to me, I will give away the ending months in advance. Or on the way in, you should have been given a card where you can say, yes, I'd like to find out more about Jesus. Find out about this king who has brought peace to earth. This king who, this God who came as king. But for now, I leave you with this tantalizing moment in the start of the story where God himself came to be our king. In the darkness of the world, in the horror of our world, there is a tear in the blackness. There is a point of light shining through. There is a promise of a reality outside of this world, and that reality is found in this baby born in Bethlehem. Light into darkness. That's the hope of Christmas. Not just wishful thinking, not just aversion, not just ignoring the world, but a hope, a reality which is greater than all our fears. In a moment, we are going to sing about this reality, about the scandal of the incarnation, rather, when God became a man. When our God was pleased as man with man to dwell, to be our Emmanuel. Emmanuel, of course, means God with us. This King, this God who reconciles nations, who brings peace, who brings justice. Now, we're going to sing this with some little lights, some little fires. And because the wardens at this church reasonably get quite nervous when we say we're going to have 400 fires, I have some instructions for you. Now, remember the video at the start had a picture of a burning church. Keep that picture in your head. That was this church, and we don't want to do that again. Okay, so listen very carefully. The ushers are going to bring some little fires to you, and I would like you to light them, holding, demonstration please here, holding the lit candle upright and the unlit candle on the side. Why, you ask? Because, well, we have to get the wax out of the carpet and the chairs, and we'd rather not do that tonight. So please try to keep the wax off, well, anything but the wax collector, and try not to light the hair of the person in front of you. They will appreciate it. I will appreciate it. We're going to get you to put out the candles at the very end. So as soon as the last song finishes, please don't walk out with a lit candle. Remember, burning church, 400 mobile flames. Not good. Okay, so we're going to light the candles and we're going to sing about the scandal of this God who became king.